Thank you, Mr. Zoller. Happy Sabbath to you all. I'm sorry I can't entirely rise to the occasion today. If you take my meaning, I am discovering the wonders of sciatica for the first time. And it is my fervent hope this will also be the last time that I will ever have to do that. My wife and I just got back a couple of weeks ago from a long pastoral trip through Europe. And, of course, we spent a lot of time in the car driving through different countries and visiting different people. And while doing that, I ended up kind of locking up my lower back just a little bit. It didn't prevent me from continuing on with the work, a little ibuprofen and a hot bath and that type of thing. But it continued for a couple of weeks until we got home, and I went right away to a chiropractor to have an adjustment. It turned out it was a rather muscular adjustment, shall we say. And about a day after that happened, then I ended up with sciatica. So I'm assuming it was because of the adjustment. Sometimes the cure is worse than the disease. But anyway, so I've been dealing with this for a couple of weeks now, and I can still work when I'm seated. When I'm seated, I don't feel too much pain. But standing and walking, that's the hard part for me. So that's why I'm sitting up here instead of standing. But I would like to express on behalf of my wife and myself how very happy we are to be back in St. Louis. We look at this place as home in many, many ways, and it's so good to see so many old friends and people who are still faithfully here. And it always brings us a lot of joy to hear news from you, and also when we're able to come and visit my parents and have a Sabbath here as well. We were very, really sorry that services had to be canceled the last time we were through because of the cold snap and the risk of ice, but so happy that we were able to get together today. I do appreciate the opportunity to speak to you, and Mr. Foster offered me the chance to show you some slides during the first part of the service about some of the things that are going on in other parts of the world, places where I serve. So that's what we'll do. I'll give you a little slideshow of some things that are happening, especially in French Africa. That's a very colorful place where there's a lot of activity going on. God seems to be calling a lot of people there right now. After the announcements and the hymn in the middle, then I'll come back and I'll have a more traditional sermon to give you. But I often start off, some of those of you who remember back when we lived in the area will remember that I often started off by quoting Acts chapter 14. Maybe you could turn there with me. Acts chapter 14. This is when Paul was returning from one of his evangelistic tours. He made very, very long trips. People sometimes think I make long trips when I'm gone for a month, but he was gone for months and months and even years sometimes before he would get back. So wrapping up his first evangelistic tour, it says in verse 26, "From there they sailed to Antioch, where they had been commended to the grace of God for the work which they had completed. And when they had come and gathered the church together, they reported all that God had done with them, and that he had opened the door of faith to the Gentiles. So they stayed there a long time with the disciples." So I pointed out before that when Paul returned from this trip, the first thing he did, or one of the first things he did, was to gather the congregation together and just share all the news of what God had done. That was a very exciting and encouraging report, no doubt, for them to receive. But another reason Paul did that is because the church here in Antioch had helped finance this trip. They were praying for Paul. They had, through their tithes and offerings, they had made this outreach effort possible. And I look at the chance to show slides and tell some stories about what's happening in other places in the world a little bit like what Paul did, because it's because we all work together as a church organization that some of us are able to make these trips, and we feel like we are serving these people on your behalf. We are helping to support them and advance the work that God is doing, but it's only because we all work together that this is possible. So as I show you some of these slides, in a way, this is a thank you from the people that are being helped and from those of us who do this work, because we wouldn't be able to do it if there weren't faithful members who are part of the church and who were supportive and praying for what's happening, and if they weren't faithful in their financial support as well, we simply wouldn't be able to serve these people. The places that we go in Africa are some of the poorest places in the world. And there's a real need for help in these areas. It would be very difficult, impossible for them to finance the church on their own. They simply couldn't do it. Sometimes some of the slides that I'll show you are not necessarily going to look, they're not going to be happy. You're going to feel sad for the people that are there. And occasionally I'll get the comment, well, why don't you show us the nicer parts of Africa? There are nice parts. Why do you show us these parts? And my answer is because this is where God's calling people. He's not calling them in the nice parts of Africa generally. He's calling the very poor, and he's calling the what we would call the little people. And so those are the people we're serving, and we're not trying to be disrespectful toward Africa, but this is just where those people are, and this is how they live. And I think it's good for us to be aware of that. Okay, so we're going to dim some lights now, and I'm going to cycle through some of these slides and tell you some stories. What I decided to do today, rather than just show you one trip, is show you kind of a montage of a couple of different trips that happened in short succession. One of the reasons that this is true is that two countries where God has been very active lately in calling new people to the church are experiencing a very significant period of civil unrest, almost to the point of civil war. There have been contested elections. That's always a big problem on the African continent. One case, the president he was not able to run for another term, but he just decided he was going to anyway. He should have been prevented from doing so constitutionally. And in the other, the president of the country just announced, it's not really possible to organize elections right now. It's too complicated, and I'll just stay on until we get around to doing that. So he made that announcement, and people have been demonstrating, and there have been a lot of people shot in the streets. In both countries, there have been a lot of deaths. And in some cases, our brethren have been kind of caught in the middle of that. We've had members in these two countries recently who are hearing automatic weapons fire from their homes. They're being careful not to go out until the shooting stops. This is the kind of thing that's happening with some of them. So let me go through here. And this is going to run a little bit longer than a sermonette, but I'll keep within my time for the sermon, so don't be nervous about that. All right. So one of the places that we'll go, first of all, here is where this little red circle is in East Africa. One of the countries there that I had not been able to visit for almost 2 years was Burundi. And Burundi was not delivering visas. It was not possible to enter the country. And the U.S. State Department was saying, do not go there under any circumstances. Embassy personnel had been evacuated. And it was really quite dangerous. But there was a little window that opened up just after the feast, and I was able finally to get a visa to go. So I discussed it with Mr. Franks and Mr. Horchak, and we decided I should go for it. So we did. So let's see. So this is a little bit of a closer view here. There are two little tiny countries right by Lake Victoria here, Rwanda in the north and Burundi in the south. And we have significant congregations in both of these countries. We have a congregation of about 70 people that meet in two different areas in Rwanda, and we now have something like 400 people that are attending services in Burundi, and I had not been able to visit them for about 2 years. Interestingly, this time, because I had to buy my ticket at the last minute, it became possible for us to go. I grabbed the least expensive ticket that I could find, and it turned out to take me through Dubai on the Persian Gulf. So I had the chance to see the Dubai airport, which is one of the busiest in the world, extremely modern now. It's a big cavernous thing. I arrived in the middle of the night, so there was nobody there, but this is what it looks like. And I had a couple of hours layover there, and this young man, Benjamin Muturi, who's originally from Nairobi, he's a church member. I was his pastor in years past when he lived in Kenya. He's not with Kagwa right now, and his family have gone a different direction. But we've kept in touch, and we're still friends. And he was very excited because he rarely has visitors, as you can imagine, in Dubai. So he said, well, let me take you around for a couple of hours. So I had the chance to see where he works. Dubai is quite interesting in that it's a mix of old and new. You have these very old steamers that look like they're going to sink at any moment. They're being held together with, baling wire and what have you. And it's quite odd to see this kind of thing navigating on the Persian Gulf, and yet we saw quite a lot of them. So you have this, and then off in the distance, if you can see through the clouds there, that's actually the tallest building in the world. And so you have an extremely modern side to Dubai as well. So we actually navigated, we went by boat out onto the Persian Gulf. Right across there is where Iran is, and we're very close to the Straits of Hormuz. I'll show you a map of that in a moment. So this is where all the confrontation is happening between the U.S. Navy and the Iranian Navy. The missile boats that are coming out, the terror attacks, that's all happened right around in here. This is one of the world's hot spots, and it was quite thought-provoking to spend even just a little bit of time here. You probably heard about the artificial islands that are being built. You may have seen photos of them. That's what you can see in this slide off in the distance. It looks much more impressive from the air, but they're actually creating these artificial islands that are gigantic, and they're building, they're all full of resorts and hotels and things of that nature. So that's quite a construction. This is the second one that they've started building. You probably heard about this. It's called The World, and these are all artificial islands meant to reflect the countries and the continents in the world. You can actually buy property there if you want. A lot of Arabs are investing their oil wealth in places like this. And then, of course, when you get away from the creek or the old traditional part of Dubai, then you have this incredibly modern part of the city financed with oil money and business money. And you have, of course, this is the Burj Khalifa, 163 floors high, 2,722 feet. So it's the highest building in the world. And I wrote about this in a column in Discern magazine recently. It gives you a totally different perspective on things when you're that high up on an observation deck. You see lots of things that you don't see down below. As I mentioned, this little choke point here is the Straits of Hormuz, which is in the news a lot. You'll be hearing quite a bit about that. Lots of traffic goes through there. These are the Iranian fast attack boats that are harassing the U.S. Navy all the time as we try to make sure the U.S. is determined to keep free traffic going through there, because a bunch of a very large percentage of the world's oil transfers through here. So I found it interesting. The U.S., the Navy sends aircraft carriers in there just as a show of force. We're coming through whether you like it or not. And, of course, the Iranians don't like that, and they try to harass as much as possible. But I thought you'd find it interesting to know that we have a church member who's living right in the middle of all of that. And he keeps the feast days and the holy days and is pursuing many of the same spiritual goals that we are. So it's just interesting to know that we have church members of the Church of God in a lot of these different areas. So my first stop was in Rwanda, in Kigali, and Rwanda, of course, was the place, the site where the terrible genocide happened in 1994. But since that time, there's been more progress here in this little country than in any other country that I've seen in Africa. It's really progressed a great deal. So there's some modern shopping malls. It's a lot cleaner. The government's passed rules against litter, so you don't see the garbage blowing around that you would in many countries. Most of our church brethren live in a rural village up on a mountaintop far away from Kigali. It takes about 2 hours to get there in a four-wheel drive. So this is my usual vehicle when I go up there. The roads can be very bad. They can be quite treacherous. In fact, I learned on this trip that one of my previous drivers, who I used many times, and he drove vans for us, had his van slipped off the side of the road because it was slick from rain and mud, and he barrel rolled all the way down the mountainside, and it killed him. So those are things that can happen, and it did in this case. He was a very careful driver too. That's one reason that we used him. But anyway, so these are very, very remote church members. This is a church hall that we built for them, and this is where they have church services and also where they hold the Feast of Tabernacles. You notice the structures off to the right side of the photo. It looks like kind of a framework of wood. Those are booths. When they keep the Feast of Booths, they sleep in booths. So this is the structure over which they put tarps, and they put a kind of a foam mattress down on the ground, and that's where they lodge during the Feast of Tabernacles. So they really do tabernacle during the Feast of Tabernacles. Here's the lectern that you can see, and we have the church logo on there in French. Also, notice on the table the little basket that's there. That's their basket for the offerings during the holy days. So I think they have cooler offering baskets than we do. I'm trying to see if we can't do something like that in the future. I think it's a little more decorative. And here's our very faithful elder, Mr. Jean-Marie Nyame Mundeli, who is giving the announcements here, speaking to the congregation. And you can see how everyone is seated and listening. The children all sit to one side. And you would be amazed that there is not a peep from those children during services. They all sit together. There's no adult sitting with them, but they have just learned discipline, and they sit there very quietly and don't make a sound all the way through services. There's no fidgeting. They just very quietly sit in their spot there. It's quite impressive to see the work that their parents have done with them. Mr. Mundeli is a very faithful elder in the church, has been for more than 20 years. And he and his wife had some very trying events that happened to them during the genocide. They actually hid young people who were being sought by the militias in their home, risking their lives to do so. And there's other stories that we've told on a number of occasions, but they really did risk their lives. And Mrs. Mundeli was beaten to the ground by a gun butt because she wouldn't tell the militia what they wanted to know about where the young people were located. And they actually managed to save the lives of a couple of them. And one of them, who was a teen at the time, now has a family of her own, and she comes to visit them from time to time. And they've just become friends because they really saved her life. And a lot of our brethren in this area behaved with incredible heroism. It's a bit hard for us to believe, perhaps in our environment, that those things can happen in this world at this time, but they can and they do. And those are things that are, it's good for us to think about. This is the chorale. They have matching t-shirts when they sing, and they usually write their own words. They'll take a melody that everybody knows, and someone with a little flair for the language will write their own lyrics to a hymn for the occasion, whether it's a holy day or some other event. And so it's very interesting and different kinds of melodies than what we might think of, but it's typical to the area, and it's certainly done with a lot of enthusiasm to praise God. Usually when we get everybody together, when the two congregations come together, we will have a we'll offer them a meal. We can feed everybody for about $150. That's all it takes to give everybody a meal, including a piece of meat. And that is a rare thing in this part of Africa. I may have shared that with you before, but I've asked around a little bit how often farmers, which is what most of our church brethren are there, how often they are able to eat meat. And I was told once or twice a year on the average. So to have even a piece of maybe tough beef or a little piece of chicken, that is a real treat for them. And we're very happy to be able to make that available to them when we come through for holy days or for times when we get everyone together. So here are the children with their plates, and this will probably be the best meal that they'll have for a couple of weeks. During the visit, this is the Burume family, and I've mentioned them before. They are actually Congolese. They live just across the border from Rwanda in the Congo, around Bukavu. And if you know that name, if that rings a bell, it's because that's an area that is frequently fought over by warlords. And so all of our Rwandan brethren have been refugees at times. This family has had to flee also at different times. Pretty much everybody in this Great Lakes area of Africa has been a refugee at one time or another, because when there's a war in one country, people go to the other one, and the next time around it may be the other way around because there's so much unrest. One of the reasons that's true is because if you have a smartphone, probably an element in your smartphone came from this region. This is a region where some extremely rare minerals are located, and those minerals are necessary, those metals are necessary for building our smartphone technology. So if a warlord can get control of it even for just a couple of weeks or months, he can make a lot of money, and that's why one reason that it's so heavily fought over. But I show you this picture of the family because Mr. Burume unexpectedly died Passover, and he just became sick, and within a couple of days he was dead. People aren't able, they don't have the medical care that we do. A lot of times, many times people die and nobody knows what it was. They just aren't aware of it. It's not possible. So now he's left a very numerous family. His wife is trained as a teacher, but she still has young children at home. She can't really work full time. So we have been trying to work with Mrs. Burume and the children. The church has provided money for them, scholarship money for them to be able to continue going to school. And we're looking into finishing their house. She has just a kind of the basement area of a house. It's made of wood. It's pretty rickety. It was meant to be a stopgap measure until they could build something more substantial. And obviously she doesn't have the income to do that now. So we are working with Mrs. Burume and the children, who are all very well behaved and charming, to take care of their needs. The drive out to that area is very beautiful. You drive through some jungle. You drive along these beautiful lakes, the lake country, which in some places reminds me of the coast of Italy or the southern coast of France. It's kind of like the Riviera in a way. And here's Mrs. Burume. We went all the way to the border. She assured me that I could arrange something locally and cross the border over into the Congo, but I wasn't going to do that without a visa. I tend to stand out in a crowd over there, and so it would be hard for me to pass without being noticed, and you don't want to get on the wrong side of government officials who want your money. So we had her come across onto the Rwandan side, and we went over her needs, the needs of the children, and this is something that the church is able to do, as I said to you before, because we all work together. So we left her some money for food. We left her some money for scholarships for the children. And she called us the next day. This had been almost a year since her husband had died. And she told us that after our visit and the security that the church had brought her, at least for some months, it was the first time she'd slept all the way through the night since her husband had died. So there's a lot of good that's being done in the lives of people who really, really need the help. And you're a part of that. It's interesting to drive through some virgin rainforest on the way. This is an area where you can still attract wild chimpanzees. I had the opportunity to do that one time for half a day while we were here. And just along the side of the road as you're driving along, you'll see colobus monkeys and other kinds of monkeys. There's a lot of wildlife still here, so that's kind of an interesting drive. The next stop on the trip was Bujumbura in Burundi. That's the other little small country down below. They had a very destructive civil war over the course of several years. Some of the same tensions that had caused the genocide in Rwanda happened here too. But I was able to get a visa, as I mentioned. Just a couple of shots to give you an idea of what life is like here. You can see the vendors with all of their wares just spread out on the ground. And what they'll do is they'll wait till a bus comes by, and then they'll run up with their basket and hold it up so that people inside the bus can shop. They can buy what they want as they go along, either to eat right there or to take back with them. The roads are not very good. This is the road north. We actually have to drive about an hour and a half from Bujumbura to get up to where most of the church members live. And so this is the road. This is what the road looks like. I tend to use a four-wheel drive when I'm here as well, just to be on the safe side. This is one of the poorest countries in the world. I think it's the fourth poorest country in the world. That doesn't mean that people go hungry necessarily, because most people are subsistence farmers, so they grow what they eat. But they're just very, very poor. One of the major means of transportation in Burundi is just a bicycle. If you can own a bicycle, you can make a living transporting things. So here you're seeing they're transporting an entire living room of furniture on two bicycles. You've got a bed, a couch, armchairs, you've got it all. It's all there. It's amazing what can be transported. Here's a fellow who's transporting used water bottles, mineral water bottles, which is what you want to drink when you're there. You can't drink the tap water, obviously. But the country is poor enough that for him to take a load of empty bottles like this, which would be worth what here? Practically nothing. That's a job for him, and he can make eke out a living by transporting things like that. Other things, you'd be amazed probably to see what you can transport on a bicycle. This is a very hefty load of firewood strapped onto the back of a bicycle. They load just all sorts of things on there, and there's a constant stream of them when I'm driving north or south to and from the area where our church members live. I mentioned before that whenever your vehicle stops, somebody will rush up to it, try to sell you something. That's what these girls are doing here with this vehicle. And this is a shot I took from the inside looking out, and they're holding up what they have to sell, hoping that we'll buy something and they can earn a little bit. On the way up, we're right on the border with the Congo. In fact, that little bit of water that you can see in the middle there, that river is the border. This is the Rusizi River, and I don't know if you remember the column that I wrote in Discern about escaping Gustav, that giant crocodile that eats so many people. This is where he lives. He lives in that little river right there. So we don't baptize people in that particular river. And the mountains in the distance there, that's in Congo. We actually have multiple congregations now here. We have five different places where congregations are meeting for a total of over 400 people. And some of them are very, very rural. It takes a four-wheel drive to get there. This is the road that leads to one of them. And this is one of the new congregations that has just asked to be associated with Kagwa, and it's in the little village of Gisumo. You see the man in orange over on the left. That's Nathan Mokeshimana. He was an elder with the Church of God Seventh Day in the past. That's where they learned about the Sabbath. Then he began studying and learning about the holy days, and he and his nephew began looking on the internet for a church that believed what they believed and would be willing to make contact with them. So this is what happened about 12 years ago when I first went to visit them in Burundi, and things have been growing and progressing well since then. So Nathan is a well-known man with a very upright reputation. He takes no money from the church. He grows his own, he works his own farm fields, and then that's how his family eats. And then he works as much as he can as a pastor also. So we have recognized his credentials some years ago, And so he is just a very faithful servant. And it, in large parts, it's a result of his reputation. People have a lot of respect for him. And then he's able really to explain the Bible very well. He really knows his Bible well and our fundamental beliefs. And God is calling people. This is really in the middle of nowhere, way off the beaten path. And yet God is calling hundreds of people in this environment to the church. This is another one of the congregations inside the hall that they had built themselves. It's very musical. It's quite, they sing full blast and accompanied by drums usually. So it's typical of the region and very enthusiastic. This is the other side of that hall. You notice some light is coming through from the top. Those aren't light bulbs. There's no electricity here. It's because the roof looks like this, and we're actually going to have to be, we're in the process of getting some money together to help them improve their hall. If I were to show you my French Bible, you would see in some pages that it's obvious that drops of water have hit the pages of my Bible. And that's not because I got caught outside. It's because I got caught inside. The roofs are very rarely watertight unless we actually buy corrugated tin for them, and then that works a lot better. And they're all waving at you here. I said I would be showing this slide to people in other countries who had helped make the visit over there possible to them and the help to them. So they all are waving and saying thank you. This is another view of the hall there. Mud brick that they dried in the sun themselves. Then just thatched roof, which has to be replaced. It works pretty well if you keep it up, but there's a lot of maintenance involved with it. So another road to get back out again, and we're going off to visit another new congregation, which is this one in Rugombo. This is a larger town, and this is a hall that they've kind of rented temporarily. Also mud brick, as you can see there. They have a corrugated tin roof, and we'll be in the process of helping them probably build their own little hall so that we don't have to pay rent on it. This is what it looks like on the inside. You can see the big drum that they use to accompany the music that they sing. And they sing with a great deal of gusto. You notice out the doorway, there are lots and lots of children out there. Those are the village children who are coming to see something entertaining. Us. They have no television, no radio, nothing electronic. So if anything new happens in the village or something unusual, all of the children in the village are going to crowd around and try to find out what it is. So they're all peering in the door and the windows watching as we hold our little service Bible study on the inside. And I've explained before, when I walk through a village like this, I have a trail of children following me around wherever I go because it's free entertainment. So this is that congregation. All of those people were in that little building, plus, and so they're, again, waving when I told them I was going to take some photos to be able to share what was happening there. They wanted to extend their greetings. There are three other congregations which are more established, and I'll show you the main one in just a moment. But first of all, I wanted to explain that one of the things that I do when I go into these areas is to try to concentrate on leadership training. And the reason that that is the case is because I can't deal with every individual member, and so one of the best uses of our time is to train the local leadership and make sure that they have a good, solid grasp of the Bible and that they have the fundamentals of how they need to go about serving their church brethren. So we choose some church leaders, both men and women, and I hold a day of seminars, sometimes 2 days of seminars every time that I go through the area there. And we cover things like, as I mentioned, fundamental beliefs. I may cover a Bible topic about something that they maybe don't seem too clear on. We'll give them reminders about things. And then some of it's more practical about how to organize church services and things of that nature. So, and then there's lots of time for them to ask questions, and they do ask lots and lots of questions. So that's it's very, very helpful to be able to have the time together. So we actually rent a kind of a restaurant hall during the day and because it has tables and chairs. You probably would be surprised to learn that there are a lot of people in Africa that don't have furniture in their house. They can't afford it. Even something like a plastic table and chairs, they don't have it. So they squat or they sit on a little tiny bench that they'll have made. And so to have a place where there are actually chairs that they can sit down on comfortably so they can concentrate, that is much appreciated by them. It's all natural light, no light bulbs. So you have to sit where you can have as much light as possible. And that's what they're doing here. Again, we provide a meal for them. A lot of times in this part of Africa, people only really eat once a day. They may have some tea or something in the morning, and then there's one good meal, and that lasts them for the day. And so we try to provide one good meal for them. Don't know if this looks appetizing to you or not, but to them it looks very appetizing. There's lots of food, plenty of it. And these are the things that they grow locally. So it's a kind of a spinach. There are beans that they grow locally. Rice is a staple in Africa. We often think of that as more of an Asian food, but a lot of Africans eat it. They eat it every meal. There's some fried bananas there and some potato sauce, and then there are French fries. And they do that in honor of me. They don't really like French fries. French fries are safe for me to eat, so I usually ask them to put that on the menu. And they don't mind, but they'd really rather have something else. But they'll put up with the French fries for my sake. So this is the main church hall that we have. This is the church hall where we have services on the Sabbath, of course, but it also serves as the site for the Feast of Tabernacles. And we had over 400 people attend the feast in this hall last year. It's still in the world. We're still constructing. We're putting windows in, and we have a lockable door now that we didn't when we started. And we'll eventually put a more solid floor in and things of that nature. But it's typical for what a church would have in this part of the world. We're not alone in having structures like this. And you see the papers that they've strung through the air. That's just a way to decorate and beautify the building. They do that the best they can with what they have, and to honor God. It's interesting, the congregations here, and we're working on this, but they tend to all sit together. So you can tell that congregation A is sitting over here, congregation B is sitting over here. And we had a bit of difficulty because there are five congregations here, and each of them has at least one chorale, sometimes more. And every chorale wants to participate when we have a big event like this. So we ended up having about 45 minutes of special music because every chorale needed to be able to sing. And I'm working with them on that to try to reduce that a little bit. But so here they are singing hymns, and they just there's no... let's see. No, I take that back. They do have an electric keyboard now. Electricity finally made it to this village. So they have some big amplifiers. It needs to be loud. And then they get an energetic man up front to lead hymns. So that's what you're seeing here. And this is the group that all got together in front of the church hall in the back. So this is the group of about 400 people who are composed the Church of God, Kagwa, in Burundi. As I was getting ready to leave this last time, this lady came up to have a look at me. She was just a village lady, not from the church, but she was quite curious to see a light-skinned person come through. I thought you'd enjoy seeing how she's carrying her purse. There's more than one way to carry a purse. So ladies, if you get tired of wearing purse over your shoulder, you might try this. And then we passed back through Dubai on the way back out from this trip. And I was flying Emirates Airways, which is one of the Middle Eastern airlines, and I thought you would find this interesting. This was one of the public service announcements that they had on the airplane. For your safety, please stay seated while praying on board. So they didn't want them out kneeling toward Mecca in the aisles when it came time to say their prayers. And also, you might find this interesting as well. I was following the flight path, and we flew between Tehran and Baghdad. So we're flying right over where the big wars had occurred there in that place. And if you can see the script on the screen, we're just about to fly over Yerevan, the capital of Armenia. And Yerevan, just from Yerevan, you can see Mount Ararat, where the Ark came to rest. So that I looked out the window. It was too cloudy, so I didn't get to see the Ark on the way over. But I tried. So then another trip happened. So as I mentioned, I'm giving you, because of the visa situation, there were several trips that happened in short succession, just weeks in between them. So we went into Kinshasa in the Congo. That's the first arrow. That's another place where there's a lot of civil unrest, violence in the streets, shooting, and they weren't giving visas for a long time. So I wasn't able to get in there for months. Then we went over to Togo and Cameroon. Back to Togo, Ivory Coast, and then flew out. So that's what you're going to be seeing now in the next few slides. This is arriving in Kinshasa in the Congo in the middle of the night. And it's very chaotic, not a lot of street lights, and this is a pretty dangerous city. So you want to make sure that I'm accompanied by people and we don't slow down as we head for the hotel if I arrive in the middle of the night. This is what the center of Kinshasa looks like. Excuse me, some construction going on. Vendors out in the street. Beer deliveries. No matter how bad the economy is, you can find beer. There's always beer available. This man is not trying to do anything nefarious. He's actually the taxi tout. So it's his job to call out to people whenever the taxi stops. He calls out to people and lets them know where this bush taxi is headed. And if there's not enough room for him on the inside, then he hangs on the outside like this. So he rides around like this in between stops. Sometimes there are more than one. The motto is there's always room for one more in the taxi. And so you see some pretty interesting arrangements here sometimes. The streets are not in very good repair, as you can see here. This, in fact, we actually drove down into, I think it was a burst water pipe probably, but we drove down into it, and I lifted my feet up off the floorboards so that they wouldn't get wet. That's how deep the water was. The president of Congo actually got stuck here with his convoy, and he got very upset about that. When they were telling me the story, I told them, well, yes, I guess that would be very embarrassing for the president to be stuck in his own capital city. That he probably wanted it fixed right away because it was embarrassing. And they said, no, no, he doesn't want to be immobilized. He's afraid people will start throwing rocks at him. So anyway, he had it fixed. Within the day it was fixed, but it's back to this now. This is the outside of the church compound that we rent in Kinshasa. This says Church of God. This is Kagwa in French. And you can see that they have Bible studies a couple of times during the week, which are open to anybody who would like to come. And then Sabbath services on Sabbath morning. You can see they've got they have Life Open Truth. The French version of the website is there. And we have over 100 people now that are attending services in this house. This is what the house looks like inside the compound. Because of criminal activity, you've got to have a wall around your house. And as usually, there's razor wire on the top of it. This is typical on the continent. And so this is the hall where we have services. This is what it looks like on the inside while we're having a Sabbath service. Usually no electricity. They sometimes get some at night. And this is at sea level on the equator, more or less. So it is very, very hot and humid. So I'm totally soaked. I don't wear a jacket. I usually wear a tie. But there's not one part of my clothing that's dry by the end of a service. But those are that's just the way everybody lives here. Another shot of people singing hymns before a service. And here the congregation is listening to the different messages, which are usually given in Lingala, which is a local language, although sometimes it's a mix of Lingala and French, because most people have a little bit of French, but Lingala is the local language. Who are these people? There are a lot of students. They're people who have studied the Bible. We have a few members in this congregation that go all the way back to Worldwide, so who've been in the church 40 years. And they're finding it extremely difficult. This is probably where desperation of life is the highest, because they're not subsistence farmers. They have to find a way to make some money to be able to pay their expenses, and it's very, very difficult for them to make ends meet. We have a couple of men here who are civil servants. They work for the government, and they make the equivalent of about $100 a month, which is what it costs to rent an apartment. So they can work full-time for the whole month, and all they have is money to rent the apartment. Nothing for food, nothing for transportation, nothing for school fees, nothing for any of that. So the church is intervening to help them to make sure that their kids can go to school. And if things get really bad, we will occasionally buy 50 or 100-pound bags of beans or rice, and we'll distribute that as well. We try to make sure that nobody goes hungry, people have clothes to wear, and they have a place to live. The Bible says if we have food and raiment, we should be content. That's what the Apostle Paul said. So that's the rule that we generally try to apply here, with the exception of helping the kids go to school, because that opens a much better future for them. Again, during services, sitting outside, new member of the congregation, singing special music. The man who's with his back to us, he was a deacon going all the way back to the Worldwide Church of God, so he has a long history in the church. This is what the neighborhoods look like where most people in the church there live. They would live on a street looking something like this. Here we are meeting with an outlying Bible study just outside the center of Kinshasa. It costs about $1 or $2 to get on a taxi from outside the city to the center of the city where services are held. You can imagine if you got a family of three or four or five or six, which is not uncommon, and you multiply that out, how many dollars that costs. That's a significant, you know, at the end of the month, that could almost take all the money that you made in your job just to go to services. So we're trying to organize more outlying Bible studies and then have someone go out and hold the study for them rather than have them try to travel into town. So here we are meeting with this group in an outlying part, one of the suburbs of Kinshasa. We also go, when I'm there, I'll go around and visit some of the members who've been ill. We'll do some anointing and things like that. That's what we have here. And we'll move on now to Cameroon, which is another country where we have a small group of members who live out where this arrow is pointing, kind of out in the bush. This is Douala, the main city, where they've done some repairs on the roads. A little kiosk. This is where a lot of people buy food and necessities. Here we are driving out toward the little rural village where most of our members live. There's some virgin rainforest that's still visible along the way. You'll see all sorts of animals hung up on the side of the road that you can buy to take home for dinner. This is one of the few that's clean. You will see other things like there's something called a grass cutter, which is a giant rodent about like this. That's bush meat. Anything that's meat from the bush is bush meat, and they'll eat almost any of that. So there are giant forest snails about this size. They will eat bats. They'll eat. The poverty level is so high that any animal protein they can get, they're willing to do it. Monkeys, you'll see a lot of monkeys. Occasionally you'll see a big snake. So all of those are kinds of things you see on the road. But here they actually had something that was clean, so I didn't take it home with me. And here we are on the road that's leading out to Izika, which is where it's kind of where we get everybody together. Members are scattered out throughout the country, but this is a good place where we can get everybody together inexpensively. And what I do when I come into the country, rather than trying to go around and visit everybody, would take a lot of time, we pay to bring them all in together, and we can do that very inexpensively, and we put them up in inexpensive rooms, and that way we have a lot more time to spend together, which is what's most important. This is the Ezeka Palace Hotel, which is where I stay when I'm there. It's a little bit ambitiously named. I think if you'd seen it on the inside, palace is probably not the word that would come to your mind. For example, this is my toilet and shower. The water was not running, as it often is not while we were there, so I asked if I could have some water to wash up with, and they brought me this bucket of water. So that's what I had my bucket bath with in the morning. And you have to use, that bucket has to go for flushing the toilet and washing up. So this is the little group that is growing. We have other people that are coming along. Many of these people are from the same family, not all of them, but many of them are. And we have baptized one new person here last year, the man on the far right. So this is where I spend a couple of days each time I go to Cameroon. The lady on the left here, she's the matriarch of this group. She grew up in the church as a teen. She has memories of me from like 25 years ago when I first started going into Africa. And so she does the cooking while we're there. You can see the food that they've prepared for us. And so we have a couple of meals, and then we just sit and talk. And they ask questions about the Bible. They ask questions about all sorts of things. What's happening in the West? What's happening with these crazy American politics they're hearing about? There's all sorts of interesting topics that come up. And we talk about everything. We just talk basically for 2 days while I'm there because they really miss the contact. Sometimes I'll set up my laptop and I'll do an audiovisual presentation about something or let them see an InnoCord or something like that that they don't normally have access to. One of the interesting stories that happened this time occurred during the Feast of Tabernacles. There was a terrible derailment of a train in Ezeka during the feast. In fact, they heard the derailment. They heard the train crash from services. And these, obviously, I did not take these photos. These are newspaper photos. But you can see what happened in this derailment. Hundreds of people were killed. It was a real mess. And, of course, when they heard that loud crash, everybody came running. And afterwards, in many cases, they wished they hadn't because they saw bodies in very bad shape and people suffering and screaming and moaning. And they said it was a real effort for them to be able to get back into the spirit of the feast after having seen a witness something like that just about halfway through the Feast of Tabernacles. So it was a bit of certainly a challenge for them. So you might remember this little group. They're spread out over a lot of different regions in Cameroon, and but God is calling people, and the group is growing very, very slowly. This was the trip back to Douala. Again, you see unusual things on the road. And then took the plane on to the next destination, which was here in Togo. Vendors out on the street. This is what you commonly see as you drive around town. Ladies carrying things on their heads. That's the way they transport things. This is a motorcycle taxi. That's cheaper than a car taxi. Transporting things. These fellows earn their living with a wheelbarrow just transporting goods around for shopkeepers. And in that environment, we have a small congregation of about 20 people, very faithful, going back to worldwide again, so long-time members of the church. We've had a few new baptisms recently, which has been encouraging, and quite a few children. So this is where we meet for services, on the back porch of one of the members. You can see there are bars all around. That's for safety's sake, security's sake. And so this is where we have services. We usually have a Friday night Bible study one on there and then services on the Sabbath. The ladies are very good in the kitchen, and this is one of the places where it's safe for me to eat. I can just really dig in. I don't have to worry about it. I've never been sick in Togo. They like fish. That's a very popular dish there. This is the back half of a tilapia, which was my meal that day. And this is the bulk of the group. There are some that live farther north and aren't always able to come for these visits. But we have two of our better educated members here. That we actually have two members of the church who own their own automobile here. And this is the only place in French Africa where that's the case. So God has really blessed them. And they've been a wonderful example of faithfulness. Just to tell you a story about this group, which was interesting, we were going through all the trouble that happened over our recent separation from our previous association, they were reading what came out of Cincinnati, and when I came through to visit them, they said, "Something is wrong, please tell us what it is. We just need to read these letters, and there's something wrong going on. Please be honest with us and tell us what's happening." And their discernment was just very, very acute. There were people living in Cincinnati who didn't see that there was something wrong. But in Togo, just from reading the letters, they discerned that there was something going on, and they wanted to be aware of it, and they responded very well. Last country that I'll show you today is this one. Well, actually, there's a couple of slides maybe from Canada. But this is Ivory Coast or Côte d'Ivoire. Abidjan is located here. This is where you land. And as usual, God doesn't call people in easy places to get to in French Africa. So he's calling a lot of people out here in the region of Man, which is, again, out in the middle of nowhere. They've found out about the Sabbath and the holy days, and now we have growing groups that are in that area there. This is Abidjan, which is quite a modern city. You even have traffic jams there. But once you leave the city of Abidjan, things revert to what you would see in a lot of rural Africa. We have one little congregation that's just on the outskirts of Abidjan. This is Lame. That's their church hall. So this is where about 10 people meet for services each Sabbath. They listen to recorded sermons. One new lady who's been attending with her children. And another one of the ladies. I usually try to bring what I call a care package when I go, because they do with very little. So I'll take $20 and buy things like powdered milk for the kids and sugar and maybe some hot chocolate, powdered hot chocolate and coffee. And those are just little luxuries that they eat enough, but they don't have those little extra things. So they get very excited when they see a bag of sugar because that's a special treat for them. The ladies usually fix a meal for us when we come and visit after we'll have a Bible study, and then they'll serve us lunch. This is where lunch is prepared outside, and that is a future lunch walking around, as you can see right there. And this is Michael and his family. He actually lives in Abidjan rather than on the outskirts, and he has a job working on a fruit plantation and does quite well. So he's been able to build a house for his family. And this is a man that was brand new, was very interested, had lots of questions he wanted to ask. He'd been asking them questions about the church and wanted to continue with me, which we did. They like to write things on their cars. They decorate their vehicles. This one says, "A good heart is better than a beautiful face." So they're kind of philosophical about things there sometimes. This is a traffic inside Abidjan. I took this photo because if you look in front of the car right in the center there, you can see it's a military vehicle. You don't want to shoot photos of anybody carrying a gun. They get nervous about that. But they're all over the place. There are convoys of military vehicles, heavily armed men, and this is the case in a lot of sub-Saharan Africa because of the instability and the various civil conflicts that are going on. I see a lot of UN vehicles, a lot of UN convoys in Ivory Coast. The largest contingent of the UN anywhere in Africa is in the Congo, but you see a lot of them here in Ivory Coast as well because of their recent civil war. This is where we will stop sometimes for lunch. This is the way fish is served there. You have to learn what to do with it. And one of the odd things that you see here is this dome, which is the dome to a cathedral. Our Lady of Peace was built by the former president out of his own pocket, which shows he had very deep pockets. But it's almost as high as St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. In fact, rumor had it he was going to build it higher, but the Pope intervened and asked him to drop it down a couple of feet, which he did. But so you're out in the middle of the African savanna, with sort of in the middle of nothing, and then you see this dome rising up out of the trees. It's a very unusual, strange thing to see there. The roads are not very good. Again, lots of breakdowns. You can see they really pack their vehicles quite tightly up on the roof. And so it's about a seven-hour drive to get up to where most of our church brethren live. Here we are coming into the town of Man, which is where I stay. That's my HQ when I'm in the area there. Like I said, you see some pretty heavily loaded vehicles. It's amazing that they can get the stuff up that high, but they do regularly. Traffic can be quite a challenge to try to get out and visit our different church brethren. Some colorful scenes there that you see along the way. This is what Man looks like early in the morning. And this is the spot where we rent this little hall. This is a hall that we rent to keep the Passover. We've had services here a few times in the past as well. And also I do my leadership training with the local leaders. So here they are. We had a full day of meetings with them here on different, as I said, different topics to help them learn more, better how to serve in their local areas. I'll tell you one quick story, and then we're almost done here. But let me tell you what these men decided to do about preaching the gospel. They said, we understand we're not supposed to go door to door. That's not biblical. But we're really eager to be able to share the truth with people, and we want to be able to answer them when they ask us. So they got their heads together, and they said, what can we do to encourage them to ask us questions? So what they did was they divvied it up, there were about 10 of them, and they each moved to a different village around Man. And they just set up house. They rented a little house, they got some land that they could farm, and they began farming, and they began observing the Sabbath. And people got curious. They hadn't seen people living that way before, and this is what they thought would happen. So townspeople are coming to them and saying, why are you doing this? Nobody keeps Saturday. There are no churches that keep Saturday. And they said, yes, there are. Well, it's not in the Bible. Yes, it is. So just by being there and by being a light, they've caused a lot of curiosity, and people are coming to them and saying, tell us what you're doing and why you're doing this. And as a result of that, there are little congregations that have started growing up in all of these different villages around there. And I just thought that was quite a creative approach and a willingness to sacrifice, you know, move someplace new and just do your best to be a light. And it's bearing fruit. It's quite interesting. So this was the gang that got together for the leadership training. They don't tend to smile for photos. It's a cultural thing. You're supposed to look more serious. But they're really happy. And here we are driving back. So when we go out to some of the villages where these men live and work, it's quite rural. Some of the things that you see when you're coming in and out of Man. And then we start the trip back to Abidjan, again, 7 hours to get back there. Abidjan is just like any place else. People come up to the car trying to sell you all sorts of different things, pots and pans, puppy dogs, toilet paper, flags, maps, just about anything you can imagine. Someone will try to sell it to you along the side of the road. Here he's selling bags of water. Here he's selling beach toys, just anything. And so finally, we're wrapping this up now, sunset on the way out. However, I had one more stop to make on the way back from this last trip in February, which was in Canada. So I went from the tropics to snow up in Montreal. and we had a Sabbath here with some of our church members. We have a little congregation that just started last year in Montreal, Canada, and we have about 10 people who attend with us now. We're having a service every month, once a month up there, and one of us from the French department flies up and holds a service for them, and they're very, very excited to be a part of Kagwa as well. So a couple of thoughts that I'll leave you with before I'm going to stop this now. Just a couple of thoughts. I mentioned to you before that you are helping to serve those people because of your solidarity in the work of the church. Because you're willing to participate in the work of Kagwa, a lot of people that you don't know in other parts of the world are being served. And I thank you for your participation and your commitment, because a lot of people are depending on the fact that we work together and serve them. I would also ask you, hopefully this will be a bit memorable for you to see some of these photos. Please do pray for them. They live in very difficult circumstances. And they're trying to do the same things that you and I are trying to do. They're trying to raise their children and give them a good start. They're trying to grow in holy, righteous character. They're trying to study the Bible and learn more. They're trying to be faithful to God and grow as Christians, just like you and I are doing it. But they have to do it in much more difficult circumstances than what we have. So please do think of them. Ask God to bless them spiritually. They pray for you that way. And ask God to take care of their needs as well, because the needs are very great. So I'll leave it there for now, and we'll have another hymn, I think, and go on with the service.